Meeting of the Clean Elections Commission to order. Chairman Record is on the phone. I'm acting on his behalf chairing this meeting since I'm here in person. Commissioner Titlow, we thought was going to be on the phone. We're glad to have him here live in person. And Commissioner Hoffman is absent, but Commissioner Kester is also present. The commission may vote to go into executive session for legal advice on any of the items on the agenda. The executive session, of course, will not be open to the public. Let's go now to the agenda. Having called the meeting to order, we'll go right to the executive director's report.
Thank you, Commissioner Laird. Commissioners, I will be brief as I can with the executive director's report. Since you're here, though, it's nice to have an opportunity to update you. Announcements: early voting begins today, and the primary election is August 26th. We have had our candidate statement pamphlet has been issued. And voters, our district locator is live on the website now. I want to note also that we got a direction to begin looking at data and a plan around Native American languages, which we are working on. Gina and Sarah are working on now. With respect to voter education, I just really quickly mention that the Maricopa County recorder kicked off the election season and early voting with a press conference last week that Gina and I attended, where she gave her thanks to us, the Clean Elections Commission, for our investment and efforts on voter education. And we're grateful that the Maricopa County Recorder, Helen Purcell, has taken the leadership she's taken on this. You'll see the participating candidate information there. Finally, we've been updating you on the independent expenditure reports and exemptions. We received, actually, since this was written, we've received even an additional exemption from another organization, the Farm Bureau. And then there are some notes about news. So I don't want to belabor it. If there are any questions about any of these items, I'm happy. They're available for discussion. But other than that, that concludes my report.
Questions or comments from any of the commissioners?
Chairman. Yes. Mr. Collins, on the voter education, the primary election debates.
Yes.
You said we're on the YouTube channel?
Correct.
How would you get that?
You can click on the azcleanelections.gov website, and on the right side of the website, there is a link to debates that takes you directly to that channel.
Okay, thank you.
There's being no other questions or comments, we'll move on to the next agenda item, item 3A. And with respect to item 3A and the complaint that has been filed, I think the order that we may do this morning is we'll hear the executive director's report and recommendation with respect to this matter, and then if anyone cares to speak on behalf of the complainant, we'll do that next, and then finally comments by respondent. So without further ado, Mr. Executive Director, if you'd like to present your recommendation.
Yes, thank you again, Commissioner Laird and commissioners. I just want to briefly say a couple of things about this. This item, the timing of this meeting and this and the recommendation that are before you are driven by the litigation that's been engaged in, that's been filed by the Legacy Foundation Action Fund, which I'll be referring to as LFAF or LFAF. Their decision to press ahead with the lawsuit challenging the commission's authority and the statute that defines express advocacy, notwithstanding any finding by the commission or enforcement order, has placed me in a position of having to make a decision between entirely standing on procedure without having analyzed the issues raised in the complaint or providing you with my analysis. Had my analysis concluded that there was not express advocacy, I would be recommending that the complaint be closed, and I assume then that the lawsuit would be dismissed. But for LFAF's insistence that litigation go forward immediately, this recommendation of this meeting, therefore, would not have happened until at the earliest August 28th. But I owe the Commission my honest assessment of the materials presented by the parties. And I do have a confidence level, I have a high confidence level that this is the proper analysis. This is the statute that's been employed by the Arizona Secretary of State's office and the Maricopa County Attorney's Office in the 2010 matter of the Committee for Justice and Fairness, and the Secretary of State's office and the Arizona Attorney General's office in the matter of either citizens or campaigns, I'm not sure the name, for better neighborhoods in 2013. The Secretary continues to employ the statute in the analysis, even when it declines reasonable cause, as it did in the matter of Arizona Public Integrity Alliance in the past few weeks. And it also was used by the Commission in its decline to provide a no-action determination to Secretary of State Ken Bennett's proposed voter education campaign. Additionally, the Commission has defended the statute in the CJF case as amicus. And I would also just say that the recommendation does, in sum, make a recommendation on the law, but that in light of litigation that's outstanding, and this is actually consistent with LFAF's position as they articulated in footnote 1 of their response, which indicates they believe the Horn litigation will conclude this matter, although I'm not sure I agree with that with respect to LFAF. I don't think I agree with that with respect to LFAF, in fact, but I do recognize there is outstanding litigation. And it's up for the Commission and all of you commissioners to determine the ultimate course. And, of course, your options today include adopting the recommendation, determining to hold the complaint until some later time, or dismissing the complaint. And as Executive Director, I just want to make clear that I defer to the Commission's judgments. With respect to legal and procedural issues, Mary O'Grady and her partner Joe Roth are here. They've been authorized by the Attorney General's office to represent us in this matter because of conflicts of interest. And with that, I'd like to go ahead and do a brief PowerPoint on the law here so that everybody is up to speed on where we're at.
Good.
Paul, is that PowerPoint available?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Yeah, we'll
make... Would you mind sitting?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
So, my intention here is to just set the stage to understand the recommendation. Hopefully this will actually work. So we have here that campaign finance law, should we wait? Commissioner Record, do you want us to wait until you get it transmitted to you? I'm sorry.
It would be helpful.
Okay, well, I think we can do that with some pretty easily. Sorry.
No problem. There, I got it. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. So we're on the, I guess it's the second slide. So there we discuss, and I think the commission is very familiar at this point with the fact that, you know, the law limits candidates and the contributions they may take and requires them to report their contributions and expenditures. Entities may make independent expenditures that advocate for and against a candidate that are not contributions to candidates. And if an entity's independent expenditure is coordinated, it is an in-kind contribution to the candidate. Those are all basic premises. I think we've talked about those in the past, and those issues are detailed in the briefing you've received. We talk about express advocacy. An independent, we'll talk about that first in the context of independent expenditures. That's an expenditure by a person or a political committee that expressly advocates the election or defeat of a clearly identified candidate. Again, this is language that comes out of 16901.14. I think it's language that's familiar to all of us who've been dealing with these issues, certainly the commission. And you see there the words express advocacy are there. And so that takes us to the next legal definition in here, which is express advocacy is defined in a statute called 16901.01, which was passed as part of the Clean Elections Act by the voters. That statute has a definition of express advocacy that includes what we colloquially refer to as magic words, which is the vote for, vote defeat, etc. And then we have the second definition, which is the issue here before us today, which is the longer definition, which the font isn't quite big enough, but making a general public communication, referring to one or more clearly identifiable candidates, targeted at the electorate, that in context can have no reasonable meaning other than to advocate the election or defeat of the candidates, as evidenced by factors such as the presentation of the candidates in a favorable or unfavorable light, the targeting, placement, or timing of the communication, and the inclusion of statements of the candidate or opponents. Again, just to reset the stage for this, if a communication is express advocacy, it's a campaign expenditure, and reporting and disclosure obligations apply to the entity making the independent expenditure. That brings us to the next question that's in this complaint, which is this question of coordination. Again, why does coordination matter? Because there are campaign finance limitations that apply to candidates, and of course, independent expenditure groups may make independent expenditures freely. But when they become coordinated, they become in-kind contributions, which are directly related to the campaign contributions. And also there's a disclosure interest there as well in knowing precisely who is actually making the expenditure. Those should need to be made without cooperation or consultation between the candidate or an agent of the candidate. And you see the rest of the language there. I don't want to just read the bullet points, but I do want to. And feel free to interrupt me. Obviously, you can with there's a point at the end for questions. So the statute next tells us that an expenditure is not independent if a number of circumstances apply. And there are four circumstances that are outlined in the statute and was codified as 16901.14 and is now codified at 16911. And we can talk about those if we get into it, but essentially those terms are identified here, you have them in your materials. Essentially, you have there one definition: an officer, member, employee, or agent of the political committee making the expenditure is an officer, member, employee, or agent of the committee of the candidate, or an agent of the candidate whose election is being advocated or defeated by the expenditure. There's an arrangement, coordination, or direction with respect to the expenditure between the candidate or the candidate's agent and the person making the expenditure, including any officer, director, employee, or agent of the person. In the same election, the person making the expenditure, including any officer, director, employee, or agent of that person, is or has been either authorized to raise or expend monies on behalf of the candidate, or receiving any form of compensation or reimbursement from the candidate, the candidate's committee, and the candidate's agent. And also, if a Finally, the expenditure is based on information about the candidate's plans, projects, or needs, or those of the candidate's campaign committee, provided to the expending person by the candidate or the candidate's agents, or any officer, member, employee of the candidate's campaign committee with a view towards having the expenditure made. So those are things the statute says are not making an expenditure not independent. I'm going to see. So that concludes my legal outline. I think we'll play the ad if we could, and then I have, or I can make one summary point, whichever you prefer.
Go ahead.
Okay. Let me make the summary point first. I think you'll find that this advertisement, which you all have had made available to you and as well as the transcript of it, is express advocacy, and I do think the commission has jurisdiction. This advertisement in context has no meaning other than to advocate against Smith for governor. Other possible meanings are not reasonable in context under the precise test articulated by Justice Roberts in the Wisconsin Right to Life case. And there's no discovery necessary to make that particular determination. Any other interpretation reduces 16901.01 to applying a so-called magic words test, such as vote against Smith, which both the Supreme Court and the statute have rejected. So that's kind of where we leave things. I guess the question is, if you want to watch the ad again, it's up to you. I don't know that record-wise we need to view it. Do we? No.
If you have it queued up.
Okay. All right.
Smith's conference also said Obama's budget was, quote, a balanced approach.
These policies are wrong for Mesa. Tell Scott Smith to make his organization more like Mesa, not the other way around.
So as I say, commissioners, I mean, my direction is at your disposal. My goal here was to make sure that I, because of the litigation posture that's been taken, that I advise you of whether or not this, in my view, this is express advocacy. And I've done that. And so, you have a number of options in front of you. And I, will take my direction from you at that point. And if you have any questions of me, I'm happy to answer them.
Thank you, Mr. Executive Director. Okay, well, at this point, would anyone care to speak on behalf of complainant? Okay, if not, would anybody care to speak on behalf of respondent?
Howie's asking me to be outrageous, Mr. Chairman, so if I am, it's his fault.
Duly noted.
For the record.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman, members, Mr. Collins, for the opportunity to come here today. We appreciate you taking the time out of your schedules. I do have a few points. I'm Michael Liberti. I represent Ducey 2014. You've received a lot of correspondence from me. I'd like to make a few points based on that. First, I do want to note for the record that we don't think the commission has subject matter jurisdiction. We've made that point. We don't waive it, but we appear to address the substantive elements raised in the complaint. I want to defer to Mr. Torchinsky, who is here on behalf of Legacy Foundation Action Fund, on the issue of express versus issue advocacy. We've made our point clear. We agree with Mr. Torchinsky's points. We don't agree with the executive director on various reasons. But for the sake of time, I'll defer to Mr. Torchinsky. On coordination, I've made the point several times that this commission has exactly what it needs in front of it to dismiss the complaint against Mr. Ducey on the coordination count. Whether or not the Legacy Foundation advertisement is express or issue advocacy is not a threshold question that bears on the determination of coordination. If it is expressed advocacy, then there are reporting requirements that attach, but it is a separate question whether there was any
coordination, communication, direction, consultation between the Ducey campaign and Legacy Foundation. Now, I know for the record that the person making the complaint is not here, okay? The person making the complaint did not ask anybody to appear on his behalf. The person who made the complaint is the lawyer for Scott Smith. Nobody on behalf of the Scott Smith gubernatorial campaign asked somebody to appear. In the last month, it's been since we've received the complaint, I've provided responses to this commission. I provided a supplemental response to the commission yesterday, and I provided a initial response to the Maricopa County Recorder's Office with a mountain of evidence. In fact, you have a CD, I have a red will. Well, it's about 1,000 pages thick of evidence that we've gotten to respond to the complaint. The complainant has given you zero evidence of coordination. The complaint makes tenuous observations about individuals who are vendors of the Ducey campaign who have specific responsibilities. They are limited in their scope of agency for the Ducey campaign, making unsupported accusations and connections with Legacy Foundation Action Fund. You have before you six declarations of individuals. These declarations are sworn under the penalty of perjury that the information provided is correct. In each of those declarations, those declarants say that they had absolutely nothing to do with the advertisement that was run by Legacy Foundation Action Fund. They had nothing to do with any sort of activity in Arizona. Larry McCarthy is a media consultant based in Washington, D.C. He consulted on an advertisement in a Nebraska Senate race. He had nothing to do with the advertisement here. Jack Padovano owns a corporation that does direct mail. He helped another group called Legacy Foundation several years ago do a mailer with respect to SB 1070 when that was a hot issue. He testifies in his declaration, absolutely no coordination. You have two declarations from people associated with Copper State Research and Consulting, where Shauna Peacow, the president of Copper State, says, yes, I admit, I submitted public records requests to the city of Mesa for information, but that was done in a way that, you know, the timing of it, I didn't receive this information until after this advertisement aired. And by the way, to come clean, here's everything that I got. We provided you with every piece of information that Shauna Peacow obtained from the city of Mesa, and here's what it is. 500 pages of calendars, hundreds of pages of financial disclosures of Mr. Smith, hundreds of pages of reimbursements by Mr. Smith, where Mr. Smith asked the city of Mesa taxpayers, and he did receive about $100,000 in reimbursements from the city of Mesa taxpayers for what look like junkets across the world to cities like Morocco and other exotic European and Asian cities. He received some pictures of Mr. Smith at a meeting with Joe Biden, attending that meeting. None of those pictures were in the Legacy Foundation Action Fund. And there was other expense reimbursements for Mr. Smith where he billed the city of Mesa taxpayers for lunches with other people around town. Commissioners, nothing in that document set had anything to do with the advertisement at issue here. Beyond that, you have a declaration from the campaign manager for Ducey 2014 saying that nobody coordinated with Legacy Action Fund on this advertisement. Then in addition to that, you have the president of Legacy Foundation, Christopher Rance, saying, yes, I'm involved in this advertisement, but none of these people identified in the complaint had anything to do with this advertisement. That's the evidence before you. It is compelling that the person who made this complaint has provided nothing in addition to rebut that evidence, and it is compelling that he is not even here today to defend what he put in that letter. Now, why is this important? It's important because the law, as interpreted by the United States Supreme Court, as set down in Section 16-901.14 of the Arizona Revised Statutes, and has been interpreted by this commission since at least 2006, is that there needs to be a showing of actual coordination before the commission moves forward with the complaint. And the reasons for that are critical. This commission cannot be a forum for rival campaigns to drop bogus, unsupported, and in my opinion here, desperate complaints to drive a media story and to get this commission to act on something to influence the result of the election. That is not the purpose of the campaign finance laws. And respectfully, that is not the purpose of this commission. The purpose of this commission is to uphold the act and to make sure that people are acting pursuant to the law. It is not a forum for political maneuvering, and that's what's been done here. You can't just file a complaint with speculation and expect this commission to go on a fishing expedition. That's not what happened with the Maricopa County Recorder's Office. An independent counsel dismissed that complaint swiftly. The complainant didn't do anything. It's been 2 weeks. The complainant didn't provide any additional evidence to try and revise that complaint. It just isn't there. Mr. Collins presented some slides on the law. That is a nice job of reflecting what is in the law. From my count, there are at least three lawyers on this commission. Forgive me if I'm missing somebody. But you don't just look at what's in a statute. You have to look at the way the courts have interpreted those statutes. And dating back almost 20 years, the United States Supreme Court in the Colorado Republican Party Committee, the Supreme Court said that you cannot have in statute a presumption of coordination just because you have some overlapping members. There has to be a showing of actual coordination. And in my first letter to you, July 15th, I cite many other cases that follow that. Indeed, in my letter to you, I cite a transcript of a commission hearing that I attended at the end of May, involving a matter under review with the Secretary of State, where this commission dismissed a complaint against the Secretary of State for coordination, saying that there was no evidence of coordination. There has to be some evidence of actual coordination. And I'd like to read you some of the things that the commission said. Commissioner Reckert commented, "As I read the definition of independent expenditure, it has to be made without cooperation or consultation. And those, to me, I read them as something that occurs concurrently with the decision to make an expenditure. I have a hard time seeing that because you endorse a message of somebody after they've already made this expenditure, that you're somehow coordinating. It takes it outside of that and would render this," meaning the statute or the complaint, "inappropriate." Mr. Hoffman said, "Arizona law defines independent expenditure as an expenditure by a committee, like the peace officers, that is made without cooperation or consultation with any candidate or candidate's agent. Paraphrasing there, and it is not made in concert with a request or suggestion of the candidate." And he goes on to say, "There is no evidence that there was that this was true for the expenditure in question." That is a conclusion that this commission drew just 2 months ago in a complaint that similarly had no factual basis. This commission swiftly dismissed that complaint. I cited in my papers examples of three matters under review. You have the cites there, from the 2006 gubernatorial election, where there was overlapping vendors between a state party and a candidate and an independent expenditure committee. This commission decided that there was no reason to believe a violation exists and swiftly dismissed all three of those complaints. So the precedent is there, the law is there, even the text of the statute. If you look at the text of the statute, it begins with the cooperation or coordination lead-in. There just isn't anything here. There isn't anything to justify keeping this part of the complaint active and on the docket when the primary election starts today. Early ballots go out today. There is no reason to have this matter open and to continue it being in the public. I believe the commission should follow the lead of the county recorder in dismissing the complaint. The commission should follow the lead of the Secretary of State when it dismissed similar complaints against the complainant's own clients, where he made arguments that are directly 180 degrees to the arguments that he makes here. And I think the commission should follow its own precedent. So with that, commissioners, I believe that summarizes my presentation. I would be delighted to answer any questions that you may have, if you have any.
Commissioners?
Mr. Liberti, I think your presentation and your points you made were well taken. I think you did a good job. As you know, as our executive director, Mr. Collins, has stated, and all likely we're only looking at the first part of this, which is the express advocacy, whether or not, which we'll probably vote on today. Do you feel that if the other matter, which you're speaking mainly of, the coordination matter, is not settled today, we just want to wait on that? Is that cause, we'll say, harm to your side just by the fact that we don't do anything today?
Commissioner Koester, thank you for the kind words. And addressing your question directly, I would say that there are problems. First, let me just say I think that this complaint should be dismissed. It should not go forward. There should be no investigation. But I would appreciate that the commission does consider dismissing it today, because as I said, the election is going forward. Just the other night, Channel 3 ran a featurette of each candidate, and I don't know if any of you saw it. One of the features one of the parts that was mentioned about Doug Ducey was there's a, quote, 200-page complaint filed by the Scott Smith campaign against Mr. Ducey. Now, that was exaggerated. It was a 5-page complaint with 200 pages of unnecessary attachments. But it is out there. Besides, there is a statute that I would direct you to, section 16-957. I believe it's part C. It's a little confusing. I'm not sure exactly what it means, but it says that if the commission doesn't act on a complaint within 30 days, a candidate is allowed to go into superior court on a private right of action to enforce the violations alleged in the complaint. So if the commission doesn't act today, there's risk that Scott Smith may drag this into court, which is, again, another sensational media story, an inappropriate use of state resources, and just unnecessary. So pardon me, Commissioner.
No, Mr. Liberti, I was just going to ask you if you could cite that statute again.
Mr. Chairman, I just had to grab my book. You didn't see me, but I came up here with a lot of stuff in my arms. But okay, section 16-957C. And it's a little confusing, but I want to make sure that we state our point here. It says any candidate in a particular election contest who believes that any opposing candidate has violated this article for that election may file a complaint with the commission requesting that action be taken pursuant to this section. If the commission fails to make a finding under subsection A of this section within 30 days after the filing of such a complaint, the candidate may bring a civil action in superior court to impose the civil penalties prescribed in this section. Now, this is a confusing section to me. I have a lot of questions as to what these elements mean, but it would be a distraction for a candidate to bring an action in Superior Court over this section. It would drag this commission into something, it would drag Ducey's campaign into something, and it would be costly for the taxpayers. So, Mr. Chairman and members, I believe that everything is here for this commission to act independently of the executive director's report, which I will point out didn't make a recommendation either way.
But everything is on the table for you to make a swift dismissal of this count against
the Ducey 2014 complaint and then focus on the remaining issues in this complaint. I'd be delighted to answer any other questions.
Mr. Labarde?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
The statements that you made, and I guess this is as much a question for Mr. Collins as it is for you, but I've been through the stuff. I have to confess, I have not read every line of it and all the exhibits that were attached to the complaint. But that being said, you stated that there is no evidence of coordination provided by the complainant, and I just want to make sure I understood you correctly. And then, Mr. Collins, if you had any contrary view that I may have missed something with regard to that, if you could speak to that as well, too, please.
Mr. Collins is gesturing me, so I'll go first. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That is accurate. And to summarize, the complainant submitted a complaint. It had attachments, which were largely quoted news stories from the Arizona Capital Times, a 200-page campaign finance filing by Ducey 2014, absolutely no evidence of any sort of coordination. We provided responses to this commission and to the Maricopa County Recorder's Office, and you all received my CD with, I think, roughly 1,000 pages of material. And, Mr. Chairman, I don't blame you for not reading every line of that. But if you were to read every line of that, you would see that there's no evidence of coordination. So my point is that not only have we made the case that there's no coordination here, but the complainant has been given the opportunity through a right of reply to provide the evidence that was lacking in his complaint. He didn't do that. He didn't even show up to this meeting to defend his complaint. That's my point, and we think that it is appropriate to dismiss that count. I'd yield to Mr. Collins.
Commissioner Laird, Commissioner Record, I would only say this about that if you look at the recommendation at page, I guess it is page 4 and 5 and footnote 3, you'll see there that we have the cited specifically the Mr. McCarthy statement. And in addition, we have cited Mr. Rant's affidavit as well. There's also a footnote there that says that we have not addressed, and we see no cause to address the direct response, and that the PCAO-related aspects are also, because there's no evidence that this third party by whom the complainant alleges Mr. PCAO was paid. There's no evidence of that. So that's our effort to place the evidence to place what is in the complaint in the recommendation, and then, additionally, there is a the question then would be, assuming in the context of this complaint that this communication were express advocacy, whether or not Mr. McCarthy and Mr. Rant's affidavits are sufficient to not raise any issues under 16901.14, and the parts of that definition, including the parts of that definition that identify what is not an independent expenditure. I have been careful in this recommendation because I believe that that threshold question in the context of this complaint does trigger different questions around who is the what the appropriate response or obligation of anybody was to not go farther than that. But the question, as I think the recommendation summary, for example, specifically said, would be whether or not the definition of 16901.14 allows for includes conduct that is not specific, that is not dispensed with entirely by the affidavits of Mr. Rance and Mr. McCarthy, and that is the question. There are questions there with respect to agency. I don't want to place any words in Mr. Liberty's mouth. I think he said when he got up and began testifying that they're not agents. I'm not in a position to know the answer to that question based on the papers.
But Mr. Collins, right now in terms of the complaint, is the only evidence that the complaint has provided is the summary statements on page 3 of their complaint that just says,
That's exactly right. Yes, I think that the recommendation, I believe, and if Mr. Liberty disagrees with this, the recommendation is intended to explain what we think the complainant alleged, and that's correct. So I'm not trying to be cute. I just am not in a position to characterize in the way that Mr. Liberty might what the complaint says. But those are the facts that we think are in the complaint. Yes.
Okay, thank you. And then I guess I would defer some further discussion until executive session when I can inquire of Ms. O'Grady about Mr. Liberty's characterization of the law. But I do have to say to the commission that I don't see much here in the way of supporting some bald allegation of coordination. And to me, it's right now something that I think would be prejudicial to both the electorate and to inappropriately prejudicial to the Ducey campaign to not take some action in respect to the coordination question, because there's just nothing here that makes me think there should be any action.
Mr. Chairman, if I may just quickly address that, I want to make sure that the commission knows I am not faulting Mr. Collins in his recommendation. So,
you can fault me.
Well, to the effect of the coordination count, because I do want to recognize that this meeting was called together very quickly, and Mr. Collins was asked to do a lot of heavy lifting in a short amount of time. But what I do want to say is, number one, I think it's appropriately agendized for the meeting that the commission could take the action that we're requesting. Number two, I think there's a sufficient amount of information in the executive director's report to provide guidance. Number three, I think there's plenty of information in the filings from us, from Legacy Foundation, and from the complainant himself to justify this action. And then I would also say that I think that you need to read the statute in conjunction with the cases that have been cited, also in conjunction with the prior action of this commission in the Murr decisions from 2006 that are cited, and in the transcript that I provided, and also finally in the actions of the Secretary of State and the County Recorder. Happy to answer any other questions.
In my comments, were not intended by any way to point out any deficiency in Mr. Collins' analysis. It's just he took a very prudent approach, and I'm just looking to press the envelope a bit more to address an issue beyond what his recommendation is, and I think Tom did a fine job on what he did in a very short time.
Thank you.
Commissioner Titlow.
Chairman, thank you. Mr. Liberty, Mr. Collins, thank you for your analysis as presented by both gentlemen. I appreciate all the information that you both have given. With regard to the ad that we saw regarding the Smith and President Obama, Mr. Smith, I take it, is running for governor also in Arizona. Is that true, Mr. Liberty?
Oh, pardon me, Mr. Titlow, I didn't hear the last part of your
question. Mr. Smith, he's running for governor in Arizona?
Mr. Chairman and Commissioner Titla, yes, that's correct.
Okay. So the ad I just saw a while ago, and if the ad had left Mr. Smith out of the advertisement that we saw, then I think it would have been pretty clear that there's no violation or allegation of violation under the law here. But when you include Mr. Smith and Obama together, Mr. Smith being a Republican, I think, and Obama being Democrat, so the ad associates Smith with Obama. And so that to me seems to indicate that Smith is with Obama, and therefore Republicans don't vote for him, but vote for Ducey or some other guy. So that's sort of clear to me from the ad itself, you know. And I think that analysis or that observation would be true of people looking at the ad. But on the other hand, also you have the fact that there's no evidence, as you say, or further evidence as provided by the complainant, affidavits or anything else. And so I'm thinking about those two issues, about what the ad brings out to people, and then the evidence that we have before the commission. But I would like to have this an executive session later on where we can ask questions of our esteemed counselor here as we go forward. But thank you. Those are my observations.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner Titla, I just defer to Mr. Torchinsky to comment on the substance of the ad, other than just to say that the Ducey campaign had nothing to do with it.
Thank you.
Anyone else?
We're going to hear from...
Yeah. Okay, thank you, Councillor, very much. Appreciate
thank
that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioners. I'm Jason Torchinsky. I'm here on behalf of Legacy Foundation Action Fund. I am counsel to Legacy Foundation Action Fund. I want to first thank the Commission and Mr. Collins for holding this hearing expeditiously. And I just want to make sure that the Commission is aware of the entire procedural context here. First of all, this ad came off the air on April 14th. The complaint wasn't filed until July 1st, right as the election season started to heat up. I think that is an important factor for the Commission, because I think it goes to Mr. Liberti's point that this whole matter appears to be a publicity stunt on behalf of Mr. Smith. I also want to point out that Maricopa County Elections dismissed the entire complaint before even getting a response from the Legacy Foundation Action Fund. Our response was due on a Friday, and on, I believe it was either Monday night or Tuesday night, we got the letter announcing that it had been dismissed. As has been noted, we have also filed a lawsuit challenging the state's definition of express advocacy and the Commission's jurisdiction over the Legacy Foundation Action Fund. But we are here today in an effort to cooperate with the administrative procedure and in hopes that this matter can be resolved expeditiously and simply without the need for extensive and potentially prolonged litigation. With respect to the recommendation's conclusions, I have to admit I'm not wholly clear on what precisely the executive director's recommendation is about what the commission should do going forward. I understand that he concludes that the ad is express advocacy, but exactly what the status of the complaint should be going forward from here, I think he kind of deferred that, and strikes me as odd given that we have a return date next week in front of the judge on August 7th. I also understand the commissioners received the letter that we sent yesterday addressing a number of points in the recommendation. I want to review the highlights of our disagreement with that analysis, and I'm going to ask that the commission in the end reach a conclusion consistent with that of Maricopa County Elections and dismiss the entire complaint. First, I think that the recommendation fails to present a full picture of the Supreme Court case law in this matter. In Wisconsin Right to Life, which the recommendation relied on fairly heavily, I think it's important to remember that Wisconsin Right to Life was about an electioneering communications statute that was passed as part of BCRA. And the electioneering communications statute, by its own express bright line terms, applied only to broadcast ads that were aired within 30 days of a primary or within 60 days of a general election. Here, the ad we submit was was aired more than 120 days out from the election, and more like, I think, somewhere about 150 days out from the election. And in Wisconsin Right to Life, the court sort of admonished against any what they called an intent and effects test, Well, an intent and effects test is exactly what Mr. Collins does throughout his recommendation, and Commissioner Titler, exactly what you just said. You said the ad pairs Obama and Smith, and therefore that must be a signal to Republican voters that they shouldn't vote for Mr. Smith. I mean, that is your perception of what Republican voters or voters who might vote in the Republican primary, and I also point out that under Arizona law, independents and people with no party registration are also eligible to vote in a Republican primary, and I think that's important to note as well. You know, the court in Wisconsin Right to Life said there should be no discovery or inquiry into contextual factors, and said discussion of issues can't be banned, and that any ties should be resolved in favor of the speaker. The recommendation concludes that there's only one reasonable interpretation of that ad. Well, then you're saying that either Maricopa County is totally unreasonable, or the comments on the YouTube page that was just shown to the commission, you know, the comments where people say, hey, this actually makes me like Mr. Smith, you know, is also an unreasonable conclusion, which doesn't seem consistent with anything that the Supreme Court has said, particularly when it has said over and over again, ties are resolved in favor of the speaker. I also point out that the recommendation didn't discuss Citizens United at all. In the wake of Wisconsin Right to Life, the Federal Election Commission went back and created an 11-factor test to determine what was acceptable during the electioneering communications period and what could be prohibited during the electioneering communications period. In Citizens United, the Supreme Court expressly basically overruled the FEC's 11-factor test and said, you know, this runs the risk of creating a situation where government officials pore over every word of a test to see if it accords with the multi-factor test they promulgated. That is exactly what the recommendation does here. The recommendation claims to be objective, but the reality is that it reflects the wholly subjective judgments of the executive director. As I pointed out, you know, viewers who saw it and commented on the YouTube channel reached a conclusion very different from what Mr. Collins concluded. It also sort of glosses over the fact that the Maricopa County elections, again, in consultation with an outside counsel, reached a very different conclusion than Mr. Collins. The fact that both citizens and other governmental entities reached a conclusion different than the executive director demonstrates that there is clearly more than one reasonable interpretation of that ad. The other significant fault that I take with the recommendation is the recommendation in its analysis of timing in the statute seems to focus on the timing of the ad in relation to Mr. Smith's resignation and fails to, in fact, reflect on the ad in relation to the general alert to the primary election in which Mr. Smith was a candidate. The advertisement aired and was off the air nearly 5 months prior to the August primary election. I know the commission has in the past sort of relied on or looked to what the FEC has done in similar circumstances, and I want to point the commission to a 2006 action by the Federal Election Commission where they looked at, they actually had a court order that had overruled some time frames that they had set up in their coordination rules at 11 CFR 109.21 and told the FEC to go back and either revise the time periods that were in the coordination rules or come up with some justification for the time periods that you used. And I want to just demonstrate, and I can provide a link to Mr. Collins to show where this is. The FEC went back and commissioned a group called CMAG to look at when candidates spend money on their own elections on broadcasts to basically come up with some proxy about when candidates perceived that voters could be most influenced. And I can pass around some of these. And again, I can provide a link to the copy. But these are charts that show how far out from elections. Let me see here. Here are some House ones. And I have the US Senate ones as well.
Chairman. Excuse me, Chairman. Is this an exhibit to filing?
We have not put this on file with the commission yet. This is the first time you're seeing this from us. But I will submit that it's a matter of public record because I got it from the FEC website. It was part of their consideration of a supplemental notice of proposed rulemaking that they issued in 2005 and finalized in 2006.
Chairman and Counselor, would you be making this an exhibit on your response?
Yes, if that's permissible, I will do that.
What exhibit would that be?
Brian, do we number our exhibits? I don't believe that we number our exhibits. If it would help for the record, we could submit, you know, probably later today, a letter with basically some color copies of that chart, asking that it be made part of the record.
That'd be fine. We'll take care of that.
We'll do that. But I want to point out that, you know, when you look at what candidates perceive to influence elections, broadcast ads that are really far out from the election are not where candidates spend their dollars. And the FEC used that to conclude that candidates believe that the further away an ad airs from an election, the less effective that ad is in influencing an election. And I fault the recommendation here for not addressing the fact that this ad aired so far out from the election. You know, I contrast this ad with the ad at issue in Committee for Justice and Fairness, that obviously the commission is well aware of. That ad went up on the air, I believe, either October 21st or October 23rd, just before the general election. This ad aired so far out from the general election that is an objective factor to demonstrate that this ad is not express advocacy.
Chairman, Counselor?
Yes.
Regarding this exhibit, this talks about the total estimated costs of media slots airing on or before House Primary Caucus Convention. And it seems to show that the costs of media spots are very high, closer to the election than it is out 120 days before.
I think what they're showing is aggregate expenditures by candidates. In other words, candidates spent more as you got closer to the election than they did 120 days out from the election, where you can see that candidates spent almost nothing on broadcast. So it's not that the cost of a particular ad increased, it's that the volume of ads purchased by candidates increased as you got closer to an election.
Okay. Yeah. And so your point is just what you said a while ago?
My point is that this ad aired so far out from the election that I fault the recommendation for not even mentioning the recommendation doesn't even contain the primary date. It contains the date the ad aired, and it makes much of the fact that Mr. Smith resigned as mayor on April 16th, but it doesn't point out that the primary is not until August 26th. It fails to sort of, you know, if timing is one of the significant factors in the statute, and I'll get to my arguments about the constitutionality of the statute, but if you're going to accept that the statute's constitutional, the timing factor was not addressed in a proper way in the recommendation, because the only timing discussed in the recommendation is the timing of the ad in relation to Mr. Smith's resignation as mayor, which was not, by any definition, an election. The primary election in which Mr. Smith is a candidate is not taking place until August 26th.
Counselor, can I interrupt you just to make sure I understand the exhibit? I don't see it as being expressed in dollars, so it's not, you know, a comparison of the cost or dollar spend. The way I read it, number of media spots. So it's not stated in terms of dollars. It's stated in terms of number of spots run.
I believe each sheet is something slightly different. Each sheet has some slightly different data on it. So I apologize. I think I handed up about 6 or 8 pieces of paper, but each chart shows something slightly different. They're not all the same chart.
I didn't have the one with dollars, so okay.
Okay.
S1 and H1, is that what you
got? Yeah, I what I submitted were the House and Senate CMAQ data that the FEC relied on. And so the FEC's analysis of the data in the supplemental explanation and justification that they published in 2006, they determined that nearly all spending by candidates for the House and Senate on broadcasts occur within 90 days of the election. They also, I did not submit the presidential charts, but they determined that nearly all broadcast spending by presidential candidates occurs within 120 days of the election, with a concentration much closer to the actual election day. I also point out that the FEC, again, in the 11 CFR, when they talk about sort of political data as it ages, you know, polling data that's 61 to 180 days old is only valued at 5% of its value, and data that's over 180 days old, the FEC says, has no value. And so I bring this up to point to the fact that timing of an advertisement in relation to an election is one of the factors in the statute, and I think that that was wholly ignored by the recommendation and not properly addressed. And I think as the Commission considers this today, I think the fact that this ad was aired in April of 2000 and March and April of 2014, and the election is not until August of 2014, is a significant factor because, again, if you accept that the statute is constitutional, it is, in fact, one of the statutory factors. I don't believe that timing, as it is referred to in that election, is supposed to relate to the timing of somebody's resignation as a public office holder. I think it's supposed to be timing in relation to the election. I'm sorry.
Chairman, Counselor?
Yes.
You know, the the evidence that you presented here, or exhibit, I guess, I had something that said H2, I think.
Yeah, again, I think there's two or three Senate graphs and two or three House graphs.
I thought you would make copies.
No. Each one of those charts has somewhat different data on it. I apologize.
Everybody's looking at the wrong.
You can imagine. Getting a recommendation. I apologize. Yeah, everybody's got a different data sheet in front of them, but yeah, we'll submit it so that the full commission has it.
I'm confused now because we have various charts here. 8-3.
When I submit, there's some like explanatory notes and things.
Please don't interrupt
while
I'm speaking. Thank you. I'm confused now. We have charts H3, S2, S1.
The charts that begin with H are different ways of looking at House data. The charts that begin with S are different ways of looking at Senate candidate data. The FEC commissioned the U.S. House and U.S. Senate data separately from CMAG.
Is it one exhibit or is it?
We'll make it one exhibit.
Okay. Yeah, so it's kind of confused of all the different charts. So what you're saying is that because this ad that we saw a while ago was aired almost a year before?
Not a year, about 5 months.
About 5 months before this campaign, that it shouldn't make a difference? Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm saying it absolutely should make a difference. I'm saying if this ad were aired on August 20th, you would evaluate that, you could, under the statute, evaluate that ad differently than you could if it were aired last August or in April.
Okay.
I'm saying that the distance of the ad being aired with respect to the election, I mean, how many of you, well, I'm not going to get into subjective issues. I mean, objectively, you can look at when the ad was aired in relation to the election and in relation to charts about when candidates apparently perceive ads to actually influence elections. I next want to turn to the recommendations, basically dismissal of the Maricopa County Superior Court's decision declaring 16-90101 unconstitutional and alleging that it was somehow the burden of the respondents to show how that applied. I can't believe I have to cite back to this, but in Marbury versus Madison, the U.S. Supreme Court said it is the province of the judiciary to say what the law is, as has the Arizona Supreme Court recognized as recently as the case 47th Legislature versus Napolitano in 2006, where the Arizona Supreme Court relied on Marbury versus Madison and said, quote, it is emphatically the province and duty of the judicial department to say what the law is. We also noted in our letter yesterday that there's no automatic stay when cases are appealed. We are standing right here in Maricopa County, which is clearly under the jurisdiction of the Maricopa County Superior Court. And so while it's true that the judgment of the Maricopa County Superior Court is pending on appeal, and the commission urged reversal in that case as amicus, the fact of the matter is that the reversal sought by the commission has not yet occurred. And until such time as the appeals court rules, the Superior Court's judgment is in force and is in effect and is clearly binding on this commission. I was sort of a little bit shocked at the notion that it was our burden to demonstrate how the county court's rule applies to state agencies within the county that issued the ruling. That was kind of shocking to me. I'm going to echo what Mr. Liberti said about dismissal of the coordination complaint. I, too, believe that should be dismissed because I believe that there is absolutely no evidence there. And so I don't want to belabor that fact. And I also believe that the commission has no jurisdiction here, as we've noted in our lawsuit. Arizona's campaign finance law covers only expenditures, contributions, and independent expenditures. You know, we first submit that this advertisement isn't even an express advocacy advertisement, which takes it out of the jurisdiction of Arizona's campaign finance laws in total. Assuming the commission has jurisdiction, the commission only has jurisdiction over our matters in Article 2, not matters regulated in Article 1. We also submit that the regulations at R2-20-109 that appear to provide jurisdiction here are not in accordance with the commission's authority under the text of the statute. And I also point to the new statute at 16905-0, which divests the commission of any authority it might have asserted here. I also point the commission to 16-941-B, which also demonstrates that the commission has no independent enforcement authority over independent expenditures here. Give me just one moment. And with that, I'll be happy to take any questions from the commissioners or Mr. Collins.
Commissioners?
Yes, Consular, I'm sorry, I can't pronounce your last name. You want to say it again?
It's Torchinsky.
Torchinsky?
Yeah.
Okay.
You can call me Jason, it's fine, it's probably easier.
Maybe it might be easier. Anyway, hearing all what you said, I just have a few questions. Regarding the gist of what you're saying, that this ad was really run because of the Mr. Smith and two other people, Mr. Johnson and Ms. Blake, were leaders in this conference.
Correct.
And that's why their names were brought up. When did the conference end?
The U.S. Conference of Mayors is an ongoing organization.
I know, but when did this conference, the 2013 conference, take place for your allegations or your...
Well, the U.S. Conference of Mayors is an ongoing organization. They have regularly scheduled meetings, and they also regularly put out press releases on various issues in between their meetings.
Yes, but wasn't this meeting where Smith presided as president and Mr. Johnson was vice president, and I think was in June of 2013?
I believe that Mr. Smith served as president for a two-year term, and his term as U.S. President of the U.S. Conference of Mayors terminated when he resigned from his public office.
That's correct, but I'm just saying the information used in the ad was the findings of what took place at this annual, I think it was in Las Vegas in 2013, all the topics that were discussed, like tax on carbon and the other different things that were brought up, came from this conference, did it not?
I believe if you look at the press release page that we submitted in our link yesterday, the U.S. Conference of Mayors press release page, these are ongoing issues that the U.S. Conference of Mayors has been addressing all through. I don't think that the commission or that the Conference of Mayors was silent on these issues at the conclusion of their 2013 conference.
Well, I went back and looked at the conference. You can get that on the internet too. And I was surprised to see most of the topics. I mean, they brought up hunger, homelessness, and immigration, all the things you expect conferences of mayors to bring up. But at the end of the conference, at least last year, the biggest thing that they all agreed on, and they're all, because there's Democrats and Republicans and whatnot at the conference. In fact, the other two leaders, as you mentioned, were both Democrats.
That is correct.
And they all agreed that they thought that municipal bonds should remain tax exempt. And they all three talked about it. And that's probably not a Washington thing, but a small city, school district, county kind of thing, that to preserving the tax exempt status. So
I
didn't come away with any real feeling that this was all Democratic as far as the conference is concerned. Now, you do point out this is ongoing, and that's true. But the conference took place like 9 months before the 1st of April.
Well, a meeting took place
months
before the 1st of April.
But that's where all the press came from, is when you have your annual meetings. I think the ongoing thing is not quite as much as the annual meeting when all these presses conference takes place, when all the media gets around. So I
also believe they have a winter meeting.
I might misspoke, but that's what I heard the different things brought up. And secondly, the amount of money spent, it seems like, he was a president. You have a vice president and a secretary, I guess, that were Democrats. But it really was a disparity in the amount of money spent on the Smith ad versus the other two. I mean, it was like 95% went towards Mayor Smith.
That's true.
Who resigned, like you said, on April 14th or 15th or 16th, whatever the exact date was. And the ads did stop, as you pointed out. But to call him a mayor, you had to call him a mayor when he was the mayor, which ended on April 16th or 15th, as the date may be, I think is a point.
I think he still uses the title.
Well, he could, sure, just like ex-presidents or anybody. I'm sure that's right. So I'm just still kind of puzzled in the fact that why was this money spent against Mayor Smith? I mean, the ad. Now, you say it's for the fact that what the conference generally was for, but it's still bothersome to me.
I'm going to point you to the text of the ad itself, and I'm also going to point you to the portion of Wisconsin Right to Life and Citizens United where the court says discovery and an inquiry into intent is improper by government regulators. And so what you just asked me was to speculate as to what the intent might have been. And I will say, I think the Supreme Court in Wisconsin Right to Life and Citizens United tells us you have to look at the text of the ad. And I will point you to the text of the ad. The organization said what it said, and that's what it intended to say. I think an inquiry into intent is improper under the Constitution, because you're not allowed to do that.
Well, I hear what you're saying, but there's what they said and what they didn't say, and you could report five or six things that seem to be very democratic in there.
Because you think the organization might have said something differently had it chosen to say something different.
Mr. Smith was on a debate last night in Tucson, and healthcare was brought up. He was very, very adamant against Obamacare. But this ad seemed to indicate that he was kind of for Obamacare. I mean, I can't precisely say, but I from hearing the Republican candidates in the primary last night, they all definitely were Republican in their sounding, and especially Mr. Smith. So I think the ad just gives you a little bit of a wrong impression, at least it did to me. Now, I'm not saying it does to everybody else, but I just have to express my feelings. And when I hear him talk last night, I don't think Obama would be there.
But I think the issue then comes down to is whether or not this is express advocacy.
Exactly.
And I think that's where we have to do the analysis. I really need to have a little bit more explication from our own counsel on the Washington Right to Life considerations and the citizens' case.
Mr. Chairman, let me also point out, I think that the commission has cited to cases like Fergatch and Getman. I point out the ad focused on federal policy issues. It focused on Mayor Smith's role in those policy issues as leader of a national organization. There was no reference to voting. There were no references to the election. There were no references to Mr. Smith's status as a candidate. There were no references to pending elections. There were no references to political parties. These are all of the things that the Supreme Court said. The absence of all of these are hallmarks of genuine issue ads. And so I submit to you that this ad contains all of what the Supreme Court said it needs to be present in an ad to be a hallmark of a genuine issue ad. I think that I also fault the recommendation for saying that, there were no pending issues. I mean, I point out to the commission, Obamacare has been a constant public policy issue at all levels of government since it passed. The environment is an issue at all levels of government that isn't going away. Whatever your position is on the environment is here, and there's going to be a debate over the government's role in that. I also point out that the Second Amendment debate is also not going away. And again, whatever your view is on the Second Amendment, I think we can all agree there's an ongoing debate about the Second Amendment. So I think that the recommendations, I fault the recommendation again for its conclusion that there were no pending issues that the ad was discussing, and I think that's really not true. So I fault the recommendation again on that point. And again, submit that this ad has all the hallmarks of what are a genuine issue ad under Wisconsin Right to Life and Citizens United.
Chairman, can we run this ad again one more time? Can we see it again?
I hope so. Sure.
Sarah, I'm going to have to impose on you there.
That's a question why I'm getting that running. There's one question why they're getting that up. Could this ad run again?
Of course it could.
Okay.
I mean, yes, I think the ad could run again. Although he's not mayor anymore, and he's not president of the national... Can we pause that for a moment? I want to point out, the ad hasn't run again, and he's no longer president of the National Conference of Mayors. So if the ad were aired again today, it would be somewhat odd and awkward and out of context because he's not the mayor of Mesa, and he's not the president of the National Conference of Mayors. So, well, yes, as a technical matter, the organization could rerun the ad. It still has it on its YouTube page that I believe you're playing from now. It has not paid to broadcast the ad since Mr. Smith left office.
But he still calls himself mayor, as you point out.
I think so. I don't know. I don't see where the clear call to action required by Getman, by Fergatch, by Wisconsin Right to Life, by Citizens United is in that ad. It's just not there.
Counselor, was that a question or?
No, it was a statement, hopefully concluding statement, but I'm still open to questions if there are further questions.
Thank you.
Commissioners?
Can I make one factual point? We talked about August 26th as the primary date. I just want to make clear that the primary begins today. Mr. Liberti, in fact, mentioned that in his earlier comments. Voting began today. Just in terms of the day count, at the very least, today is the day of the election.
I want to point out, Mr. Collins, that's not consistent with what the Secretary of State ruled when they were evaluating the Public Integrity Alliance ad. They were talking about an ad that aired in May, and they were talking about it being 90 days out from the election, not 60 days out from the election. And I believe every political calendar published by the state lists August 26th as Election Day. It is true that ballots go out today, but Election Day is still August 26th.
Their people are voting right now. Have ballots are mailed today. Ballots are available to people. They can return those ballots. They do not need to wait until Election Day. And, in fact, I think and Mr. Liberti's observation is the only thing I want to mention, that his observation about the state of this with respect to the election, I think, follows in both in his argument and in terms of framing this. That's all I wanted to say.
So even if you took the ad and instead said it was 90 days out from the election instead of 120 days out from the election, it's still well outside any of the windows in which candidates aired lots of ads in the FEC reports. It's still well outside the electioneering communications windows, and it's still outside the 90 days that Mr. Langhofer argued in the Public Integrity Alliance case that the Arizona Secretary of State accepted. And I also point out, again, I want to stress, Maricopa County dismissed this matter. They are reasonable people, and they came to a different conclusion than Mr. Collins. So clearly, this ad is susceptible to some other reasonable interpretation other than what Mr. Collins said it is, or Maricopa County wouldn't have dismissed.
Chairman. Councillor, I noticed that you're speaking without being asked a question. I think the procedure here is that you make a presentation and then you're asked questions by the chairman or one of the commissioners. And I noticed that you're just jumping in and making all these statements without being asked a question. So maybe in future hearings or notice, you can, speak when the chairman recognizes you or when you're being asked a question by, some body or some commission. Just some recommendations for you that I observe. Thank you.
Councillor, thank you. Does anyone care to speak on item 3A? If not, we're going to go to item 3B. I don't know if anybody wants to comment, but before we go, consider going into executive session. We'll probably go into executive session on items 3A and 3B. So does anybody care to speak on 3B, the litigation? Okay, if not, I would entertain a motion that we go into executive session.
Chairman, motion.
Do we have a motion?
Second.
Mr. Kessler, seconds. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
And so
aye.
The ayes have it. And so we will at this time go into executive session. Thank you.